From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. We'll have open lines for you at the half. I'll also tell you about the wonderful time I had in San Jose at the Bay Area UFO Expo this weekend. An Israeli physicist believes time travel in the past is possible, and two German scientists say that they have broken the speed of light. What's it all mean? Next hour, John J. Harper joins us. Here's some of the news of the day. A patrol of U.S. soldiers apparently was so close to stumbling onto Osama bin Laden's mountain hideout along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border during the winter of 2004-05 that his bodyguards considered killing the terror architect and then themselves, according to a report published in the September 3rd issue of Newsweek magazine. A sentry spotted the patrol and radioed an alert to bin Laden's 40-man shield, who were prepared to move the sheik, as bin Laden is known to his followers, to another location. But the patrol was so close to the hideout that bodyguards were close to using the code word to kill bin Laden and then commit suicide. The secret word was never uttered, and the U.S. troops eventually moved to a different direction, according to the magazine. Well, 6 years now since we entered Afghanistan in search of bin Laden, listen to this story. According to the United Nations, opium production in Afghanistan has soared to record levels, with an increase on last year of more than a third. The UN Office on Drugs and Crime report says that the amount of opium produced there has doubled just in the last 2 years. Afghanistan now accounts for more than 93% of the world's opiates, a lot of this money fueling the Taliban. 500,000 acres of opium is being produced in Afghanistan, right in the heart of where we are. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, whose tenure has been marred by controversy and accusations of perjury before Congress, has announced his resignation, declaring that he had lived the American dream by being able to lead the Justice Department. A past Coast to Coast guest, Aaron Russo, who managed Bette Midler and went on to produce such films as Trading Places and his own documentary called America, Freedom to Fascism, has died. Aaron Russo was 64. I had an opportunity many months ago to interview him on Coast to Coast AM. What do you think about all this?
Well, the fact is that America, there's a philosophy that underlies America, that underlies our Constitution, freedom of the individual, Americans being sovereign citizens above the government being the servant of the people. And when immigrants come here illegally and then they're made citizens and they can vote, they're going to change the very nature of what made America a great country, because they've been brought up in countries where they don't have those standards.
That's right.
And they don't understand it. And so to just let people come in here and become citizens and destroy the essence of what America's about would be a terrible thing. And personally, my own point of view is, and I know I'm right about this, is that the people that want this to happen are the people who want a one-world government, a one-world order. They want a world without borders.
That's right.
And the American government is listening to them.
Aaron Russo had been battling cancer for nearly 6 years, dead at the age of 64 years old. A passenger tried to open a plane door during a Frontier Airlines flight Saturday morning, but was subdued by airline staff and passengers. Police and Transportation Security Administration staff met Flight 514 after the plane landed in New York City and took the man into custody. There were 128 passengers and 5 crew members on the plane. The passenger, Bobby Vigil, says that the man had been acting strangely. Then he and other passengers helped a flight attendant subdue the man and tie him to his seat with duct tape. Shortly after entering a guilty plea to a federal dogfighting conspiracy charge, suspended NFL quarterback Michael Vick apologized for all the things that I've done, he says, and that I've allowed to happen. In addition to making apologies to the Atlanta Falcons teammates, his coach, and the National Football League, Vick also said that he was sorry to all the young kids out there for what he calls his immature acts. Well, lots going on in space right now. First of all, there's a huge Mars hoax circulating the internet. We're going to talk about that in just a second. And also, you are going to get a glimpse, as long as you don't have clouds, of a total lunar eclipse visible all over the place. It is unbelievable. Earth's shadow darkens the bright full moon, and wherever skies are clear, it will be a time to look upward and up into the skies. Stephen Cates, of course, Dr. Sky, who writes for our After Dark newsletter and appears on the program periodically to talk about all things space. He's on the line with us now. Stephen, we'll get into this Mars moon hoax in a second, but sure. Let's talk about this eclipse.
Well, good morning, George, and good morning to the listeners. We have a most magical morning coming up here, George, for the central and western part of the United States. Keep your eyes peeled to this beautiful full moon, folks, because, George, starting at around, well, for the Pacific time, we'll do this in Pacific Daylight Time, near 2 a.m. for Pacific Daylight Time is when the partial eclipse begins. You'll see a dent out of the left edge of the moon. And then the total eclipse, George, starts for Pacific Daylight Time viewers just near 3 a.m., and that's the time, as you mentioned, that the Earth moves through that deep umbral shadow of the Earth, making it appear maybe red and maybe even stranger than that, deep red colors. And don't forget, at around 3:37 a.m., this is all Pacific Daylight Time, this is the maximum eclipse. Simply, the moon will go into the Earth's umbra for about 90 minutes, and that totality, George, ends around 4:22 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Convert the times accordingly across the country. The whole partial eclipse ends exactly at 5:23 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. But, George, it's a beautiful night here in Arizona. We're looking at the sky. I'm looking at that moon. And I'm just hoping that all the coast listeners have an opportunity to see this great sight.
They can go out at the top of the hour, every hour, Stephen, and take a glimpse at what's going on. I'm here in St. Louis, as you know, and the skies are clear. And I myself will run out there every chance I can to take a peek.
It's absolutely beautiful. And they can get more information on updates on this, particulars, of course, at drsky.com. And it's a beautiful morning. We won't have another one of these eclipses like this, George, until February of 2008. And then we have a pretty deep drought, as I call it, for total eclipses for a little while after that.
A little bit later on tonight, Stephen, I'm going to have some open lines this hour. I wonder what kind of calls we get during this kind of a situation. We always get strange calls during full moons, but with an eclipse, who knows?
You bet.
Hey, Stephen, I want to talk a little bit about this Mars moon hoax that's been going around the internet for some time. I got to tell you, I am getting 10 to 20 emails every day about this, where people are saying that the moon and Mars will be out there and that the Mars is supposed to look as big as the moon. Not true, is it?
Absolutely not. And we know there's so much information on the internet. And of course, many of your listeners, of course, realize that not all of it's very accurate. And this is one that I have to laugh at, because after the great passage of Mars closest to the Earth back in 2003, on the very same date of August the 27th, this hoax has been perpetuated. I get, literally like you, lots of emails about this. And what we're supposed to be seeing right now, George, all across the listening area that Coast to Coast AM goes, is the moon is supposed to be there. It is. It's beautiful and it's full. And according to this hoax, according to this information that is a hoax, we're supposed to be seeing Mars the same size as a full moon. Can't happen. It's impossible, at least, and it's a good thing, because if Mars were that big in the sky, I think the Earth would have a few problems to be dealing with.
Stephen, how does something like this get on the internet and become so darn believable to people?
Well, I've tried to investigate that myself, George, and I come up with very few answers. It's just that these pranks seem to perpetuate themselves. They have a life of their own. And again, that's a good reason for appearing here this morning, and I appreciate the opportunity to kind of set the record straight, because there are a lot of people who are preparing, and I had one group of folks that called me here in Arizona. They were preparing a whole summer vacation around this whole event. But to answer your question specifically, these things just happen, and as we all know, in the matrix of the internet, lots of crazy things can happen.
A few months ago, when I started getting emails on this, I sent a copy over to Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor, and he said, George, it's a hoax. Don't. It's a hoax.
So, you know, it's one of the good things, though. I think there is a little good in this whole thing, if there is a silver lining. I think it gets people to want to look at the sky anyway. So, folks, if you're missing one of the objects, Mars, You have this most beautiful eclipse for the central and mountain and western time zones. And according to looking at the weather forecasts, it seems like a good majority of the coast audience, George, should have some fairly good skies, with the exception of areas maybe in New Mexico with thunderstorms and the high Rockies in Colorado.
Stephen, during the ancient times, people of that era would look up into the sky. They'd see these eclipses, moon eclipses, lunar eclipses, and also solar eclipses, and they thought the gods were doing something, didn't they?
Absolutely. And one very brief story is Christopher Columbus used this as a trick to trick the natives that he came to visit in, as we call today, the New World. And he said if he didn't get what he wanted, he would make the moon get dark at a certain time. And lo and behold, he knew a little bit more about science than they did, used it to his advantage, and guess what? He got what he wanted.
You got it. Thank you, Stephen. Dr. Sky, that's DR, drsky.com. He'll give you the latest information about this lunar eclipse, and it is going to be something tonight. And like I said, a little bit later on this hour, we will have lunar eclipse open lines. Well, Britain's leading scientists have made a final plea for the right to create the first animal-human embryos for medical research using eggs taken from dead cows. The Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority will announce its decision next week on whether to give permission, and it looks like they will, to United Kingdom laboratories to create the hybrid embryos to advance the understanding of genetic diseases. I'm telling you, eventually something's going to go wrong in a laboratory, and it's going to come out, and it's going to get us. As a matter of fact, some things may be getting us already. In a moment, a very special guest, Henry Bauer, on Coast to Coast AM. Henry Bauer is Austrian by birth, Australian by education, and American by choice. His career has been in universities, first as an electrochemist, then as the Dean of Arts and Sciences, and finally as a historian, sociologist, philosopher of science, a relatively new interdisciplinary field known as science studies. His special interest is anomalies and unorthodox things. For example, how can you tell whether some startling claim is simply rubbish or pseudoscience or the next scientific revolution? His website, henrybauer.homestead.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Henry Bauer. Hey, Henry, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks very much. I'm glad to be with you.
Me too. Tell me about your work as a scientific investigator. What do you look for?
I've been interested in the role that scientific unorthodoxies play in the progress of science. When I was working in electrochemistry, I guess like most people working in science, I hadn't really thought much or learned much about the history of science. I thought science was done by something called the scientific method. I became interested in the Loch Ness Monster and wanted to find out what science said about it, and found that science didn't say anything about it. It turns out that there are many topics like that that people are interested in, that science you would think would have something to say about, but doesn't.
Why doesn't it, Henry?
One of the reasons is, with something like Loch Ness, there's no obvious way in which you can get definite information in a reasonable length of time. And scientists nowadays have careers, they have professions, and they have to get results. So they have to choose things to work on that are almost guaranteed to give some results that they can publish somewhere.
Now, you're not a debunker. You like to investigate. You want to find out what's going on in the world of science. For example, the Loch Ness Monster, what kind of conclusions did you deduce after you looked into that?
There definitely are some unidentified animals in Loch Ness. The marvelous thing about the mystery is that no known animals fit the bill. There are excellent reasons why they can't be mammals, why they can't be reptiles, why they can't be amphibians or invertebrates or fish, and yet they're there. And the evidence, the main piece of evidence is a film taken in 1960 by a man called Tim Dinsdale.
Yes.
I got to know him. He gave me a copy of his film years ago. I've looked at that any number of times. There is no doubt that in 1960 there was a very large animal in Loch Ness that should not have been there as far as what's known about creatures in Loch Ness. It's so big that it couldn't have gotten in and out without being seen. The question is, what could it be? The best general answer is it's not just one. There's some family of creatures there. Scotland was covered with ice during the last ice age, so these things must have gotten in there after the ice age. So they came from the oceans sometime after 15,000 years ago or so.
Henry, could you say the same thing about Bigfoot, for example? Science doesn't investigate that creature, but so many people have seen it. So many people have described seeing some kind of a creature crossing the road or in the forest. How could science neglect to even investigate that?
Well, it's very, very difficult to know how you would go about finding out more than the eyewitness reports. People have tried. They've set up remote cameras and infrared devices and so on, audio equipment. We just don't have anything definite there. The special thing about Loch Ness is the existence of evidence like the Dinsdale film, lots of sonar contacts, and some underwater photographs. With Bigfoot, we have the one Patterson film, which is controversial. It's not clear-cut because, the definition isn't good enough. It was taken at too long a range and so on.
And the wife claims that she wore a costume, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I've seen a couple of analyses, one by a Russian fellow that really says this could not have been a costume.
Henry, your latest work is called The Origin, Persistence, and the Failings of HIV/AIDS Theory.
Right.
What is that? What does that mean by that?
It means that the theory that HIV causes AIDS is wrong. And I went into how this theory came about and why it is that the theory has persisted, even though there's mountains and mountains of evidence against it. It's the most astonishing thing I've come across in all of my years looking into unorthodoxies. I just couldn't believe what I was finding as I started to look into the official publications, Centers for Disease Control, Army HIV Research Group, peer-reviewed journals. If you put together all of the data that's been published about HIV tests in the United States, it's incompatible with a sexually transmitted agent.
So where does it come from, Henry?
What HIV tests detect is something that is constantly present. Over the period of 20 or 25 years since testing started, the geographic distribution of HIV in the USA has not changed. What's more, the distribution is about the same for blood donors, for members of the army, for members of the Job Corps, for women who have just delivered babies. Every group that is routinely tested for HIV shows the same geographic distribution. And it's not the distribution that AIDS had. You know, AIDS appeared In the early 1980s in New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles primarily, and a few other big cities.
Well, Henry, do you think it was concocted in a laboratory and then let out on the... You don't believe that?
No, and I don't believe that the HIV tests detect a specific virus. It seems that if you test HIV positive, the real meaning of that is that your immune system has reacted in some quite non-specific way.
Well, I got to tell you, this entire area of where science fails us is something that we all need to look at. Henry, you have, and you might want to get up to his website, which is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, because he goes through a whole litany of things that science just doesn't touch. Open lines next on Coast to Coast AM. Yes, we'll have lunar eclipse open lines in just a moment. I had a wonderful time this weekend in San Jose, California, at the Bay Area UFO Expo. Got there very early on Saturday, and we had a meet and greet. Hundreds of people showed up, hundreds, and we do a little Q&A, question and answer session, and I've got to tell you, the people in that area, you, just absolutely inquisitive and right on with all the things we talked about. And then at night, we had a dinner, and I got to tell you, most of our guests that have been on Coast to Coast over the last several years were there. I mean, everybody was there. And we honored Dr. Roger Lear of the alien implant area, and he was awarded what was called the Maverick Award for his dedication to the science of ufology and everything that he has done. And I was one of the honored people to be able to introduce him along with Jordan Maxwell. And we just had a great time, and that's something I look forward to doing every year. It's the Bay Area UFO Expo. At the coasttocoastam.com website, under the listener emails, we've got some pictures for you of the Bay Area UFO Expo as well, if you want to get up there and take a look at it. Let's go to the phones. We'll have open lines for this entire hour, full moon. We'll call it lunar eclipse full moon open lines. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Susan. Can you hear me?
Hi, Susan. I sure can. Loud and clear.
Yes. Calling from Vero Beach, Florida. How are you, George?
I'm doing great. What's going on, Susan?
I have to congratulate you on your show. You do a wonderful job. You really do. I wish you were on all day and that everybody in America could hear you at all times.
24/7 with our staff. We'll just work our staff to the bones, Susan.
We need you. We need you. We need to educate people. That's what it's all about, is education.
Yeah,
and
sure
I think
is.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks.
But basically, I'm the founder of the Florida UFO Research and Study Group called the First Group. We have a lot of listeners from our group that listen to your show and have listened to Art Bell in the past that are very loyal and faithful listeners. And my topic of study, or my favorite thing about UFOs, are the contactees, such as George Adamski, Howard Menger, Carlos Diaz, Elizabeth Clara, etc., people who have actually voluntarily come in touch with extraterrestrials and volunteered their time and effort to do basically whatever it was they suggested they do, or contribute and help them with their missions here on Earth. And one of the things, one of the great things that they've given us is the key to how to avoid illness. 100%, they say their civilizations are disease-free, or are almost totally disease-free. And it's such a simple solution that I don't know why we haven't taken heed to this. Now, I've studied Billy Mayer, for example. I've studied and met Carlos Diaz in Tepoztlan, Mexico, where there's extraterrestrials walking around that look like you and I, which is basically one of the biggest secrets our governments have, is that there are extraterrestrials living here on Earth that have actually helped the government, such as Frank Strange has talked about Valiant Thor way back in the 50s.
Oh, yeah, and he was one of the classic writers of his time.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful book that Valiant Thor wrote. I think it was called Outwitting Time. And I'm a very close friend of a contactee in Vero Beach by the name of Howard Menger.
Now, tell me about the secret.
Well.
Susan, tell me about the secret. You talk about the secret of health. What is that specific secret that they have given us?
Well, the Hunzas that are north of Pakistan also lived 120 to 140 years of age and die of no known disease, and they practice this same secret. And basically, it's just so simple, but so many people do not value their health, which to me, health is our greatest wealth. I've been teaching the secret for years. I've been doing it myself for 30 years. And yet, if I give you the solution, people will go, oh, that's so easy. Oh, we could never do that.
Well, let me guess. It has to do with building up your immune system with meditation,
no,
maybe?
No, not at all. It's even easier.
What is it? What is it?
This is it. This is a simple solution, and I'm telling you, people will go, oh, no, it's too hard.
You're not going to say drink grape juice or anything like that,
no,
are you?
No. Stop eating dead animals.
Ah.
And animal products, basically. In other words, in order to encourage life, we have to eat live foods, and most people would not take a bite out of a cow or a pig or a chicken. My children were raised vegetarian, and basically, knock on wood, to this day, they're in their 30s and 40s. They have no known diseases. They've never had.
Are you saying, though, Susan, every contactee that we know of, all those names that you've mentioned, all of them are vegetarians or were vegetarians?
Not the contactees. The people that contacted them, the extraterrestrials. It doesn't necessarily mean that the contactees could follow suggestions, but the extraterrestrials say, we respect life to such a high degree that we would never take the life of an animal in exchange for ours.
I got to tell you, if somebody lived to be 140, he'd be in the Guinness Book of World Records, wouldn't he?
They are. The Hunza cuts. I have a fabulous book written by an ophthalmologist who went to Hunza, which is it's almost impossible to get in there. But this was a book written in the 50s, and this ophthalmologist went with his wife on a very, very difficult trek because it's the most dangerous road in the world, the one that they traversed in order to get to Hunza, which is north. It's actually south of Russia, north of Pakistan, way up in the foothills.
Susan, do me a favor, though. Send me that guy's book, the name of his book, and also an email at george@coasttocoastam.com. If he's still around, I'd like to talk with him. That sounds like an incredible journey, one worth putting on the program. Let's take a few more calls. You, Wildcard Liner on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, this is Jerry.
Hey, Jerry. We're
Salem.
Well, welcome to the show, Jerry. What's going on?
Well, a couple weeks ago, you had a program about the locally produced horror movie shows.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you knew the Oscar-nominated actor that started out on one of those.
On a locally
produced movie show.
I do not. You stumped me.
Okay, it was in Tulsa, Oklahoma in the late 60s and early 70s. There was a program called the Uncanny Film Festival.
All right.
The host of it would be a well-recognized character actor, but probably most people wouldn't know his name. His name's Gaylord Sartain. He played the husband in Fried Green Tomatoes and the sheriff in Mississippi Burning. But one of the characters on the show was the young man nominated for the Buddy Holly story, Gary Busey.
Gary Busey. He's been on the program before. I did not know that. A little bit of trivia.
What was that?
A little bit of trivia that I didn't know.
Yeah, and they were on for several years. They would go back and forth. Sometimes they would do the old black and white horror movies, and then they would get packages of like Laurel and Hardy movies and things like that. But it was called the Uncanny Film Festival.
All right, we got to talk with Gary about that the next time we see him. West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there, good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, what's up?
I tuned in a little late, and I had a couple questions about the lunar eclipse.
Well, let's see if I can answer them for you. If I can't, go outside and look pretty soon.
Do you know when it's going to be?
It's starting. It's going to start very soon. just look up in the sky. Wherever the moon is, you're going to start seeing it in another hour. So it'll just start, but it'll take several hours before you get the full shot of it.
Okay.
So it's right now. It's tonight, this morning.
All right.
Okay, go. Enjoy it. But don't leave yet. Only go at the top of the hour for just a little bit. Then you come back and just keep peeking. You're not going to see much yet, but it'll start. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Brian from Omaha, Nebraska.
Hello, Brian.
Hey, I'm kind of in a catch-22 here. I'm heavily medicated for insomnia, and I basically, in the year 2000, I was forced to be a day person after for years of following Art Bell. And I'm highly intrigued by your show, and I love your show, and I'm glad to get through to you right now and talk to you. And I know I talked to you in the spring, and you told me your sleep patterns when you're in the Midwest, like I am.
Yeah.
You go to bed about 5 or 6 in the morning, and you get up, you really get about 5 or 6 hours sleep.
Yes.
For me and thousands of other people out there like me that want to be a regular listener to your show, what would you recommend, like a person in my situation, do to actually be able to tune in every night to get the proper amount of sleep, and what times, what kind of pattern would you recommend?
Well, I got to tell you, Brian, first of all, I met so many people at that Bay Area UFO Expo who work during the daytime. They have what I call the normal hour work shift, and they listen to the entire program. And then they get 4 or 5 hours sleep. They go to work, they function, and then they come home, have their dinner, stay with their families, do whatever they're going to do, and they get ready for the program again. I mean, that to me is absolutely staggering. In terms of my own lifestyle, I don't know. I mean, knock on wood that my body hasn't shut down yet with the hours of sleep that I get. I find that once a week, I will generally sleep in later than I normally do during most of the other days in the week. It's just the body's way of correcting itself. But by and large, 5 to 6 hours sleep, I tend to wake up very refreshed unless, for some reason, the phone rings. I do not shut it off, and you have to wake up and you're groggy like that. But I don't know. I've always done it this way. I can't recommend anything. But just keep doing what you're doing. Sounds like it's working for you. Unfortunately, you're on the medication for that. Wildcard line, you're on the air on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, welcome to the program. And where might you be?
This is Michael from San Diego. I just had a quick question for you.
Sure, Michael.
Well, do you know the status of Stephen Greer and the Disclosure Project?
You know, Stephen was at the Bay Area UFO Expo primarily talking about alternative energy, but he's still working on getting people to come forward and to go public. He hasn't given up on it. It's a tough road for him, but he's out there. That's the update. Wildcard line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
This is Greg calling from Winnipeg in Canada.
Hello, Greg. You sound a little tentative there, like you didn't know who you were.
Well, I just had to. This is the first time I'm calling, right? So.
Well, welcome to the show.
Yeah, and I was a little nervous earlier. I'm doing okay. I'm trying to figure out whether it's too much air conditioning or just shaking because I'm nervous. But anyhow, I'm calling to talk quickly about the 1967 Patterson film because I've been hearing a lot of like mix up stories, and maybe
there are you're absolutely right. There are
like
two different camps out there.
I love you, George, and you do a great job and all this stuff, but then there'd be like a caller that calls in, and then you guys were talking about like something about the wife talking about the costume and this and that, but all this stuff's on the net and the people aren't necessarily researching the right stuff, or they're just assuming, and it's getting just more and more, it sort of perpetuates the confusion and the falsifications, and it makes the people that are already cynics and skeptic, like hardcore, like against it.
What's your take on that film, Greg?
Well, I've had a lot of time to research. Like I've had a lot of time to listen to your show too, like the past 17 months since I had a layoff of my day job. So I've been researching a lot, and from what I figure out, like I believe in the authenticity, and there's a lot of people that don't realize about there was a report done by the North American Science Institute back in 1998, and it was all about the Bigfoot phenomena in general, and then a specific section like on the Patterson footage with old photography and measurements and a lot of estimations that like people will argue against and say, well, it can't be, you know, that big and all this, but they say they're not completely accurate, but they...
Well, you know, the wife indeed did say she had a costume on, but you know what?
Yeah, and that's where the mix-up was. It wasn't... We're going back to 2002 when Ray Wallace, the old man who was a known prankster, even was...
But some people are saying that she said that because she got tired of people barraging her about what she believes was the legitimacy of the film.
That had nothing to do with the actual Patterson film. Like, this is Ray Wallace's wife. He was the old man that died in 2002, and people got that mixed up with the...
With the foot... He's the footprints guy, right?
Yeah, he had the wooden feet, and then his nephew, his kids and all that came forward without... Had nothing to do with him wanting them to do it. They just thought they'd throw around this, you know, get some news and stir things up again. And so it really had nothing to do with Roger Patterson or Bob Gimlin or any of that. And even, like, through an interview... Ray Wallace's widow said she had nothing to do with the... Because the stories are getting so mixed up. She had nothing to do with the 67 Patterson film.
Well, but who's the person that...
Patty Patterson. She doesn't talk to the media or anything. She's the one who holds the right. She has...
But is she the one that said she had a costume on?
No. That was actually Ray Wallace, the old man. So that was his widow. She said, oh, yeah, I'd get into this, like, gorilla costume, and he'd shoot some shots of me, and here are the hands. Like, I remember the TV show, I caught it on TV, which the guy who called you the other night was talking about. He goes, and then, of course, as soon as you say Patterson's wife, that totally messes everything up, because it wasn't Patterson's wife.
Patterson's wife
is a totally different person. And so, but you can find most of that stuff on all the major websites. Like, of course, you had, like, Matt Moneymaker was on there talking about it. And that's another thing that kind of... ticks me off is that
at least with Moneymaker when he was on is you know he got to defend himself in to get his views out. One of the luxuries of Coast to Coast, and that is why it is so important, is that people will generally call in with their own perspective, their own views, their own questions. I think it's healthy. Now, you are absolutely right, it gets to be confusing. Even I get confused about things like that, but by and large, if you go out and do your research on the internet and look at the various alternatives, you'll get a pretty good perspective of what it is. Even though, as we all know, the internet sometimes is laden with all kinds of hoaxes, like this Mars moon story that we just had at the top of the hour, where on the internet they say that Mars will look as big as the moon does right now. That's not going to happen. First time caller line, we got a quick minute for you. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
This is Brandon. I'm calling from Salem, Massachusetts, the witch city, they call it.
Oh, yes. You got some problems up there with witches lately, I hear.
Oh, yeah. It's always something interesting going on here in Salem.
They're cursing each other. What's that?
You know, George, not to bring your day down, but long story short, I have been thinking about earthquakes. And I know I'm probably not the first person to come on and mention that full moons and eclipses may have something to do with earthquakes. I know you do have a lot of guests who do mention that.
Jim Berkland especially.
Yes, absolutely. Long story short, I once in a while will draw some runes, the old Viking runes that correspond to different letters in our modern language. And when I did some, I came up with an S. And I've been thinking about, I looked at the earthquake page, and I had seen where the earthquakes were, and I thought, if you drew an X on some of the main activity, it either falls around the Midwest or where St. Louis is. And when I drew the runes, I came up with an F, the first one I drew. But it was the upside-down F. So I'm thinking that maybe after this eclipse, maybe 3 days after, I don't know if it's definitely St. Louis, or maybe it might be Seattle, or some, but I really, really get a strange feeling about what might happen maybe about 2-3 days after this eclipse. We might have a big seismic event somewhere.
Well, you might be right. I got to tell you, some of these things tend to follow me. I've been in 3 mini earthquakes now in Los Angeles. None of them of any consequence. St. Louis, of course, is on the New Madrid Fault, where they had the biggest earthquake here on the continental United States back in the 1800s when it even shifted the direction of the Mississippi. Well, stand by, because as an Israeli physicist believes that you can travel back into time, and two German scientists say they can break the speed of light. John J. Harper's our guest. We'll talk about all of that and more on Coast to Coast AM.